Hi everyone. I just wanted to do a recap, if we could, on the last 12 months. It has been a year since we've entered Parliament, and we've achieved so much for animals. And I just wanted to thank you all, first of all, for your support over that 12-month period. It's been an amazing ride. And I just wanted to let you know that it's not just about the time that I stand up in the chamber and talk about these individual issues. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. We have meetings with ministers, various other members of the parliament, and their staffers in an effort to try and get the things that we want to accomplish over the line. And I couldn't do any of that without the support of my team. I have an incredible team behind me. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a series of these podcasts where we'll talk to some of the people that I work with, who really are the engine room of what we accomplish. And the first of those is Dr. Tamsin Ramsey. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Why don't you tell us what you do? I know what you do. And just for people out there, Tam's title, Dr. Ramsey's title, is that she is my research and policy advisor. So I'd like you to explain to everybody, Tam, if you would, just exactly what that means.
Okay. Look, it's an interesting role. A lot of what we do is looking at legislation that's coming up to the council that may have been already passed through the Legislative Assembly, the various bills and motions and pieces of legislation that may be of interest to us. Now, on one hand, definitely we look at things where animals are the focus and the priority, but there are a lot of things that come up that are to do with all forms of justice and that are of interest to humans that also affect non-human animals. And I suppose that's what we do. One of the things I do is I look into the legislation and see what areas there are that we can bring further levels of justice for humans and animals alike, really.
It's a really interesting area because, I mean, I always like to quote Joe MacArthur.
Yes. Right?
Incredible activist and photographer who's exposed so many aspects of animal cruelty around the world through her work, where she states, and she has a book that's titled We Animals.
Yeah, indeed.
And I think that's a really strong statement because we are. And I think many people who are involved in animal rights and the animal activism community really become quite divorced from the fact that so many things that affect non-human animals also affect human animals.
Yep.
And I think there's no clearer example of that than when we changed the guardianship laws earlier in the year, which was the first concrete piece of legislation that we were actually able to affect. And we enacted, memory serves, I think it was 10 amendments.
It was, yeah.
So maybe if you could just explain to everybody what they were all about.
So the Guardianship and Administration Act, it was interesting. I remember being with Bruce, who's another advisor on your staff, and we were at the tables office looking through legislation, and we saw this one, guardianship. We thought, wow, that sounds interesting. It sounds like a nice piece of legislation. So we looked through it, and I noticed when I was reading it that it's all to do with people who are vulnerable, who need someone to advocate on their behalf in times of, well, on their behalf when they can't advocate for themselves. And it had a description of the components of what comprises a person's social and psychological well-being. And there were a whole lot of issues in that, like, you know, physical wellness and the right environment and human company and all these other things. And one thing that was missing that I think is really important when people are vulnerable is recognising that a lot of people who are older, who are vulnerable, have significant relationships with non-human animals. And these are emotionally important, they're socially important, they're sometimes physically important. But that wasn't in the legislation anywhere. And because animals are considered to be property, even though if you speak to anybody, of course, we all know they're subjects, they're not objects, they're subjects of their own lives. and we have meaningful relationships with them, and they have meaningful relationships with us. But nevertheless, we have this odd thing in the law where they are categorised as a piece of furniture, as a desk, to be sold, to be discarded when no longer useful. So what this legislation does is it recognises them as non-human animals, as important in terms of their relationship with the vulnerable person, but it also recognises their intrinsic importance as a subject, as an individual in their own right. Because even in one of our amendments, even in the absence of the vulnerable person, provisions are made for that animal to be advocated for and to have a guardian appointed to them, even in the absence of the vulnerable person. And on one hand, it felt kind of quite simple to do because they were very logical, very sensible amendments that I think anybody would agree to. But on the other hand, I think it's the first time in Victorian legislation that I know of, and I don't know all the bits of legislation, but I'm pretty sure it's the first time that animals, the subjectivity and subjective interests of animals has been recognised in law, and that is a huge thing.
Mm. And the obvious question, I suppose, from that then is that, because this really does set up, and I'll come to this point in a second, but one thing that was really important to me about this scenario was the fact that previously these court-appointed guardians could also make arbitrary decisions about the lives of these animals.
Absolutely.
Without, and so many of these animals which were healthy and happy in any other circumstance were being taken and euthanized because the guardian didn't have to take their lives into account, which is a terrible thing. And when I explained this to people, people in the street just couldn't believe that this was an occurrence, that we were actually doing this. So they saw those amendments as very much, as you say, very common sense and very simple. And but coming to the point I was talking about earlier, what it does, I suppose, is this leads us in many ways, in my opinion, to this precursor. This is a precursor for recognising the sentience of non-human animals in Victorian legislation.
Which we already know. We already know they're sentient. It's like the legislation is catching up with what we already know anyway. And just to kind of reiterate that point you were saying before, that indeed, before this legislation, animals could be, an animal who has a, who is significant to a vulnerable person could be sold, euthanized, left outside, just traded, like a piece of furniture. This means that for the first time they're recognised as subjects, and I think it is in line with an emerging awareness that our laws surrounding non-human animals have to catch up to what our morality, what our social morality is around non-human animals. That we know because when we have a significant relationship with someone, it's usually our cats and dogs. Then on that basis, we know. It's just that other species we don't tend to get to know in that regard, so we don't think of them that way. But I think it's a powerful step forward.
It really is, and I think what's also important for people to understand here as well, because many people will be listening who don't really understand how we get to that point. How do we get to the point where we have a piece of legislation, or an amendment, for instance, or even 10, that we present to the government and lobby them, you know, to accept, you know, to make the change. And to many people, I think they would just assume that, you know, we go into the parliament and, you know, we stand there and yell and carry on about what we want, and that the government would just see how important that is and how common sense it is, and they just change the law. But that's not how it all works. And I think these podcasts will give some sort of explanation to those people about what the system is and how involved it is and why you need staff and why we need people like you. Because, I mean, I'd like you to expand on it a bit, but so very briefly for people, it's, you know, we identify a piece of legislation we want to change if it's an amendment. We have to do all the research that's involved in that.
Yes.
Find the subordinate legislation that affects.
That's right, regulations and,
make the amendments to them as well.
Yeah.
And put it all together in a succinct document
that
sometimes can be as little as 10 pages long. But, I mean, I've you know, been in the chamber when we've gone into committee on amendments to bills.
Yes.
And some of those documents are literally 300 or 400 pages long to make amendments to acts.
Yeah.
So the amount of research is just enormous.
Yeah.
Do you want to sort of go through what we do with the drafting office and things like that?
Oh, yeah. So, yes, finding, first of all, we have to kind of understand what the legislation is actually saying. So it's not written in layperson's English, it's written in its own language. So you kind of have to get in the zone and grasp the meaning of the legislation. And then often there are various sections, and there are other legislation. There's never one piece of legislation that stands alone. It's very rare that you find that. Usually there are associated bits of legislation that you have to read, because they're often affected as well. And then there are regulations which describe how you enact the legislation, and they're often impacted as well. Then we go to the drafting office, who are, I tell you, the staff at Parliament are incredible. Everyone's so supportive and helpful. What my job is to write instructions on the changes that we want to bring about to the legislation. So we have to write the intention of what our legislation is, so they understand the meaning, so they get the language right, and then identify where we want to bring the legislation and what we want it to say. And then it's a really reiterative process of back and forth and back and forth so many times between myself and the drafting office to finalise and make sure it's a tricky balance again, because you want it to be broad enough. You don't want any loopholes, so you want it to be broad enough to realise the justice that we're trying to bring for the people and the animals who are involved. But at the same time, you don't want it to be so broad that it's outrageous and it's impossible to enact. So it has to be narrow and broad at the same time. So you often have to balance these contradictions all the time. And if you get it right, in my experience so far, which is only a year, a lot of the time, people just haven't thought about non-human animals in legislation. I mean, it's bizarre in a way. Humans comprise less than 1% of life in Victoria, which is we're in state parliament. Over 99.8% of individuals are non-humans, yet all our legislation deals with, I mean, the vast majority deals with human interests only, to the exclusion of everyone else's interests. So I think when we make the moral case and the political case to the crossbench and the opposition and the government, I think when we do that, it resonates with people because it makes sense.
Mm.
We're not asking for anything outrageous. We're just asking for justice and for the interests of other individuals who aren't human to be given some consideration.
And I think that it's a great way of explaining that process too, because I think most people wouldn't understand, like, and hearing you explain it that way, people will think, well, that sounds very complicated, and it is, but it isn't.
Yeah.
You're right, it's very simplistic when we go to the drafting office and we say, this is the intent of what we want to do, and here's the instructions for it. But then you go into this whole realm of the broadness of the legislation and things like that. And I think people need to understand as well, look, it can be sometimes quite frustrating when you're dealing with the drafting office too, because they obviously give priority to the government.
Yes.
Because they are the government of the day. They need to get legislation written and through. But we can go to them with what we think is a very simple thing to be done and written up, to find that it can take as long as 9 months.
Yes.
But we can go to them with something that we think is very complex and have it back in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Depending on their workload, of course, but also, and you know, they are very adept at what they do, and they understand, and like, you're right, they're really helpful. They really want to help us get to where we want to go. And quite often where we think something might be very complex, it actually isn't. And you know, we're reading things into it because we're trying to learn so much in such a short time that we sometimes look at things that really don't affect what we're doing and think that they might, because there might be a paragraph here or a word there that is a cross-reference, but it doesn't actually end up being as important as we might think it might be.
Yeah.
But then those simple ones, they can take a long time.
Yeah.
Because, And for people too, I think they need to understand that sometimes these things, these amendments that we make, or these changes to the regulations that affect those amendments or to legislation, they can be just as simple as changing a single word.
Yes.
Or dotting an I or crossing a T. And to do that then requires, in committee stage,
yes,
the chamber to debate that one word,
yes,
which is also quite frustrating.
Yes, yes, indeed. And, you know, it's, yeah, I was just thinking about the contrast between the amendments we brought to the government bill in the Guardianship and Administration bill, and then our private members' bill of the Wildlife Amendment Protection of Birds, and the difference in those. Like, I would have thought bringing amendments to a government bill would be like an arduous process, but, and also it went to committee.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no, I mean, you just read them in.
Yeah, that's
you read
right.
them in and they accepted them. And yeah. I was like, it's in, it happened. Like, what happened? I had a cup of tea and it was done.
Yeah.
And then you look at our one to protect native water birds and how many versions of that have we had and how many iterations of that. And then the regulations and the other amendments that have, the other legislation it affects. I mean, it's been a huge process, and you've done the second reading now, but I mean, that has been an incredibly complex process.
Absolutely. And I think also, what we tend to do is, because we're on the inside of the animal rights and animal protection movement, is that we see this as a big thing for us, right? And also our opposition see this as a major thing, right, to change the laws on recreational duck shooting in Victoria.
Yeah.
But when you actually go out and speak to the broader community, particularly interstate, right, as well as here, people are astounded that it's still even going on.
Yeah,
most people are completely unaware of it and didn't know that we still did this, and quite frankly think it's the most simple thing to do. And in relative terms, it is. We could do this. It's something the government could do with the stroke of a pen.
Yeah.
They could really get rid of this. And most people see it as very common sense. Yet, when we're trying to get it done, you're right, the amount of times that we had to go back to the drafting office and have different iterations of what we were doing, because also those that are in favour of it have been so successful at going into other parts of legislation, different types, and putting sections in there that relate to it.
Yes.
That we have to find all of those. It's a real rabbit warren to go down.
It is.
And find those things. And one of the things that... you know, and just talking about people out in the electorate as well, that I'm really proud of, is the fact that we've got such a team that does have very diverse backgrounds.
Yep.
You know, we're all part of this movement, and we all have the same philosophy, but we come from very different areas. So I'm from the Surf Coast. I've lived for 30 years in amongst that surf culture and the businesses of that community, and they're very oriented towards either tourists or the surfing community, and the industries that have been there are the same. And yet, you know, you've had this grounding out in country areas, you know, and by that I mean like very rural communities for a long, long time. And you know, you bring that. And we've got others who are very city-focused people who have never really been out of there. And I think this is a wonderful thing, because we get this different, this very divergent view that brings, you know, great discussion to what we bring and how we bring it to Parliament.
Yeah.
Is that how you see it as well?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, everyone on your team is very, we have the same motivation and passion to realise justice in law for all individuals, not just human individuals. So we share that.
Mm.
But we come from such, you know, we're from diverse backgrounds and ages and experience levels. And I think it's a rich, wonderful way to work. And it, I mean, for me, it's just a privilege to come to work every day, I have to say.
it really is. So, look, we'll wrap things up there, Tam. And, look, thanks so much for having a chat. And, look, I'm really looking forward to talking with the other members of the team. And I do really feel that it's very important that people understand that it's not a one-person show. And even in amongst the government, when you see individual ministers, etc., ministers have an enormous staff
yeah.
that help them get done what they need to get done. So it's no different to a minor party being in Parliament. You know, yep. We're exactly the same. We need a very, very reasonable group of people. I mean, we're not large by minister staff by any stretch of the imagination, but we need people to get this work done. And it's not ever an individual effort. It's always a team effort.
Yeah,
so cheers for that. And I look forward to bringing somebody else next time.
Thanks, Andy.
Cheers.